everyone, and welcome to the show Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. We are live on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio and also archived on iTunes. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We're going to have a great show this evening. And don't you know, it's the first day of fall. The equinox is in about an hour. I don't know, for a lot of my listeners, we always talk about energy on this show. I don't know if you can feel the energy or not, but I'm sweating. It's got to be some kind of energy going on, and everybody's, you know, the computer's kind of weird, you know, the telephone's kind of weird, so we're going to see how this hour is going to go. But I think we have a fabulous topic to talk about this evening, which is about women. It's celebration of greatness in every woman. You know, there has been so many changes. We talk about the awakening. We talk about changes in the universe. We talk about all the things that are coming about and caring for Mother Earth and caring for women and all these different things, all these different topics. Where do they ever come around? You know, I can honestly say we would never have a conversation about the greatness of a woman. I mean, I'm almost 60. You think we're going to talk about this stuff when we're in the 70s and the 60s? No way, Jose. The woman was always told, you're going to go in and here's what you're going to do. My mother did it. I did it in the 70s when I was married then. That was just the way of the world then, unless you were a hippie. Well, I wasn't a hippie then, so, you know, I know a lot of us in the older listeners we have here, they were hippies, so they kind of were able to do that. They did find their greatness. But you know what? We kind of lost it again in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and now we're back to saying we have to start standing up. We have to find out who we are. We need to find out about our power. You don't need to walk around saying, oh, my gosh, I didn't do this for someone. Oh, my gosh, she's going to worry because, you know, I didn't finish this. I didn't do something. Or I've been dragging that all along, all these decades with me, and that's kind of something we just don't talk about. Well, you know, I think it's time for everybody to just be able to stand up and say what is important in your life. Are you important? Are you a person that's cooperative? Are you a person that's able to be magical? How about a nurturing person? My goodness, nurturing. Hey, that's what a woman is. That's what a mother is, right? Is it really? Are you nurturing yourself? So we're going to have all kinds of conversations this evening. And the book is called She, A Celebration of Greatness in Every Woman. The authors are Marianne
Rodmacher.
So correct. Rodmacher. And Liz Kolick, she'll be with us also. And we're going to be talking about this book, and I think it's going to be a great topic for this evening. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I knew I was going to do it. Sorry, Marianne.
That's all right. There's a point right there. You knew you were going to do it, and you didn't disappoint yourself.
That's right. Wasn't that fabulous? At least I said what I was going to do, right?
That's right.
And I followed
Powerful
through.
Powerful intention there.
That's right. And I followed through, and I did completion. Oh, goodness. So don't you both think, I'd like your thoughts, you know, what I had as the opening, you know, talk, because I really don't think, I don't know what y'all's ages are, but many of our listeners are across the board from 20s to their 80s. And I think we really couldn't have this conversation in the 70s and 80s or 60s even.
Yeah, I don't know if we, I would like to hope that there were women out there having the conversation. I think that the conversation was not mainstream. I think it wasn't as broad a scope as it exists now. I know that for me, it's something that my group, my circle of women friends, we talk about a lot, like where we are in our lives and what we're putting into the world and what we're taking from the world, and with the thought of what we give back, which I think is fairly typical of how women function and women think in terms of, you know, giving and taking and giving back. But it's a great conversation that I think needs to get even bigger, and I sure hope it will. And I hope that this book that Marianne and I have created contributes to that conversation too.
You know, and I think also too, it looks up. You have to look at the generations, but you also have to look at the locale. I live in the Deep South. You know, everybody, women are respected here, you know, because they just have always had certain kind of power to themselves. But there are some women who aren't respected. They don't respect themselves, nor do they respect others. But also I noticed, you know, in the Northeast, some of the women, I could say, talking to my own relatives and stuff, and I would say something to them like this, even just use a phrase, are you happy, are you imaginative, or are you mindful of yourself, or do you take care of yourself? And they're like, what? I don't know what that means. So I really think that while we always like to speak to the choir, really what I want to do in this hour is speak to those people who really don't know what this means, because it is new terminology and it is a new concept for a lot of people. You know, I get a lot of patients that I work with on end of life, and they're like, you know, I really didn't do anything with my life. I don't understand it. And we really have to go into the concepts. What did you really do? You really did have a full life. But they waited until that time to be able to look back at their life and to know that it had value.
Yeah.
So I really think finding value in your life is so vitally important, and we just need to keep pushing down the ages so we can get a little earlier in life.
People tend to fulfill the obligations that are articulated to them rather than defining their own set of expectations for themselves in their life. So we are trained very early on to fulfill the expectations in a crowded classroom, in a home with more than one child, in a community where things are scheduled and you're supposed to show up at certain times. So training the autonomy, the independent spirit, the innovator, just doesn't happen until you show up in a workforce where you're expected to be inventive and have ideas, and yet the first 22 or 23 years of your life have been spent in required conformity. And so the thing that I see really essential for young people, girls and boys, is the opportunity to learn how to address the individual need of a person when they're a youngster, so they don't confuse conformity in a classroom with conformity in philosophy or worldview or purpose.
And, you know, I think a long time ago, I can remember, you know, we went to college, and it was a job. You were going to college because you were going to have a certain job when you got out. But I think now, in probably the last decade, that's what we're seeing, is a lot of people saying, I'm not feeling fulfilled. I'm not feeling like my life has purpose. I'm not being creative in my job. And that's the reason for a lot of these job shifts or getting out of professions that people were just not able to be happy in. I mean, I was a dental hygienist for 35 years. I mean, that was, you know, 7 to 6 every day. And I think I added up on the calculator one day, I think I've cleaned several million teeth, individual teeth. And I'm going, holy smokes, you know? And what kind of fulfillment? Is that going to be on my tombstone? Is that in my obituary? You know, I cleaned over 3 million teeth. So what? What did you do with it? You know? And you really have to look at that, you know, looking at different professions, and people are saying it's time to say, I need to be better fulfilled instead of just being able to get that paycheck at the end of the week.
Right. And I think just like what Marianne was saying, we don't live in a culture that encourages independent thinking at a young age. You know, it's you spend most of your life in school, and that includes college, memorizing what you're told by your professors and dates for history classes. And I think that I know that within my own family, was not a big surprise that I was wanting to go to art school when I finished high school, but there was definitely, what's your backup going to be? And what are you going to do if you can't find work? And, you know, when you're 17, it's not high on your list of thinking, well, what am I going to do when I'm 35?
Or what's going to put food on your table or pay your rent, right?
Right, you're not thinking in that way at that point in time. But, and it is, it's an important piece of the whole puzzle. But I did go on and go to art school, and my mother did talk about that it made her nervous, but she supported me in going. She also knew that it was pretty much the only thing that I was going to be happy doing with my life. And so I was lucky enough to have a mother that, even though she was like, oh, honey, she mm-hmm. was like, do it, do it. And I had so many friends that were deeply involved in the music program in high school or the arts program or writing, and they went with what a guidance counselor told them or a worried
right.
parent who said, you know, you should get your degree in fill-in-the-blank because then you'll have a solid income. And then, you know, in your free time, ha-ha, you can do the things that make you happy. But as we all know, when we finish college or, you know, and get our first job and then move into a bigger job, there isn't a whole lot of time left in your day. And then if you choose to get married and have children on top of it, there's not enough time to do a job and a marriage and children. So the things that, you know, even if they're not creative-based, but the things that we all find inside of ourselves that we feel like, oh, that, you know, that longing and like, oh, to just be able to spend 2 hours a day doing, you know, fill in the blank for whatever it is that,
right.
that fills you with that joy. We're not encouraged to do that. And I look back to when I was starting college and I think, gosh, you know, if there had been a guidance counselor to talk to you, to talk to kids about what is it that it makes you so excited to get up in the morning? And granted, when you're 16, that changes from, you know, years later in life, where it can change. But to have a balance between thinking about what excites you, what gets you up in the morning, what gets your blood moving, what feels thrilling and scary and like kind of makes you feel nervous and happy all at the same time, and how can you make your way in the world and earn enough to support yourself? I think that there's not enough balance given to those two really important aspects of our lives.
And you know what I also find, too? I don't know if y'all remember this or have been exposed to it, but there was a period of time there. I have four kids, and my kids are now in their 20s and 30s, so I don't remember if it was in my generation or the kids' generation, but when you would go to high school and you would get around ninth grade, they would give you this test to find out what you were programmed or what you were strong in so that they could guide you in that direction to be
mm-hmm.
able to have their profession. I know we live here in the Deep South, and there's a lot of kids that don't graduate high school. And they did that repeatedly, and I know it was in ninth grade because I remember my daughter saying something about it. And then they did it again in 10th grade because they would take you out of regular classes. In other words, why would you want physics and chemistry and math if you were going to work on a car? That was their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And they would direct them to these other programs so that they wouldn't even really get a full exposure to see what they were interested in. They were going by the testing monitors. They would sit down and take this written test, and when they were done with that written test, that's what they would be guided by. So going back to, you know, what I had said in the beginning of the show, you know, hey, say something, put out an intention, or hear something, and you'll be true to yourself. They'd say to you, you're going to be good at mechanic work. Well, what are you going to say? You're going to say no? I don't think so, because you don't even know any differently. You're going to follow down
right.
that path.
My parents told me I really needed to learn to type so that I would have always a career. And, of course, they meant as a secretary. And my father
uh-huh.
shared with me on several occasions that it was just a shame that I was born a girl because I had such a good mind. And if I was a boy, he would have started a college fund for me. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to have that kind of pushback at a very young age because I knew better. I did indeed want to learn to type, and it has been the foundational element of my career because I'm an author and I have 12 books so far in my life that have been published. And I did work as a secretary for a period of time, and I brought all of my skills and my enthusiasms and my vision to bear in that career. When I worked for other people, I found ways to bring they weren't always welcome at first, but at the end of every job that I had working for someone else, it was very different at the end when I left than it was when I started, because I didn't want to trade my breath, my living hours, just for money. I needed the money, and I was willing to work hard for it, and I did it on my own terms.
You know, and I think that's so true, because also, you know, with mine doing the dental hygiene, you know, granted, you get in there and they're like, oh, good, how fast can she work and how good is she? You know, I mean, I was seeing 25 people a day. So I guess I was pretty good. But at the end, it was kind of like I was trying to connect with the people, and because I knew in my heart that I had to connect with them. That was more what I was there for. And I will never forget the day that a neighbor of the dentist office had come in to get her teeth clean, and she walked in and she was crying like nobody's business. So I figured, hey, I'm pretty good. I can do her teeth in 10 minutes. No problem. Let's talk to her for 10, see what happens, right? And so I'm sitting there talking to her, and I said, why did you come in? She said, my husband died 2 days ago, but I didn't want to disappoint the dentist, so I made sure I came to my appointment. So I sat there, and I put my arm around her and sat with her for the half an hour and didn't clean her teeth and had her come back, and I did it for her for free because I paid for it. The minute that woman walked out the door, the dentist went up to the front desk to make sure she paid, because he figured she didn't have a person to pay now because the husband was gone. And then the other thing was is that he ripped me out of my room like nobody's business. You would have thought I committed murder. He said, don't you ever talk to anybody or ask anybody anything or get any information from anybody. You're here to do a job, a J-O-B. Do it. Don't you know? I mean, I didn't last much longer. But, you know, and we look at that when we're really trying to show, you know, to show what's really good about ourselves or where our hearts or our souls are. And we're trying to open them up. We're trying to let them shine. We're trying to interact, you know, where our deeper meaning of our life is and bring it to our work. It's like, nope, don't you dare. Here I come. And you go chopped off at the knees, you know. And I think a lot of women have had that happen over the decades. You know, a lot of people will say to me, you know, well, you know, I used to love to do that, but, oh, they always told me I couldn't. Or, oh, they always said I can't. I mean, I had a relative who, she worked as a nurse, and she worked the night shift. Do you know that she's in her 80s now, and she said to me, after I saw her recently, she says to me, she sat down, not 2 minutes after she sat down, she says, you know, what happens to you when you die? Because I see the angel of death all the time with my patients for 40 years. And I go, oh, my goodness, what in me brought that conversation out in her when I haven't seen her for 30 years, you know? So we have to really, I think, people, you know, women, to understand when someone comes up and says something to you, look at it. What is that? And really cherish that moment versus any other moment that would be passing by, because that will give you some clues to your greatness, to you, what's in you, what is coming out, and what people can attract, you know, get attracted to you to sit with you or talk with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't matter where in the world that I go, Dr. Jeanette, people that know me call me a crazy magnet, because I can sit in a public place. This is no reflection on you, Liz.
Thanks, honey.
You're welcome, my friend. Dr. Jeanette, I know you wondered if Liz and I are funny, because we've written a very serious work, so that's why I'm sharing this. I can be in a European country or a city here in the U.S., and the alternative living folk come to me and sit by me. They'll offer to share their blanket with me or give me a swig of whatever they're enjoying in the moment. And some of the richest and most meaningful conversations that I have had in my travels occur in those settings, because I satellite or I communicate that I'm a safe place to come and sit down by. And I love to listen to people's stories, and oftentimes people on the fringe need someone that is willing to hear what they have to say. So,
and I think that's all about listening.
Communicating our skill set. That's something that I've noticed over the decades.
And I think also about listening.
I don't know what to say about that, isn't it?
Well, I think it's all about listening and communicating, too, because so many people don't listen to anything. They're just, they have this rote memory or rote conversation that they always have. And it's always based upon the past, or it's based upon their habits or their whatever it is. And that's what they believe. So let's talk about the book a little bit. We talk about, you have so many different things in here. And I really found it was a wonderful book. The artwork is fabulous. The pages are so, it's just a great book to look at and sit down and read. And you don't need to sit down and read cover to cover. This is something you just open it up wherever the page lands. That's what's important. And on the left-hand side of the page, they would have a saying like, she is nurturing. They would talk a little bit about that. On the next page, they would have a few quotes from other authors. But then there was also a letter. And I think the letter was so vitally important. I think a lot of times when we say, what would you like to hear back? What would you like to hear from someone else? Or what would you like to feel in response to something, that's where the letter to me comes in. That would be something I would like to hear or something I would feel that was important. So if you could share a little bit about that, let's talk about one topic maybe. How about she is nurturing? Because I think that's so important. A lot of people really are needing that. But also she is nurturing is also nurturing of herself, which so many women are evading that right now.
Yeah. I think that it's also one of those ones, it's one of the qualities in the book that quite a few people have asked us about, because in the subtitle of the book, A Celebration of Greatness in Every Woman, it's been a little, there's been a hesitation, like, well, I wouldn't really consider being nurturing as something great in the grander scheme of the world, and you know, being out there with a voice and more dynamic, but nurturing is like, to have that capability and to be generous and with the people in your life and with yourself in that way is so important and so strong. And I think that I go back and forth, and I've said this on some of our other interviews too, I go back and forth about what my favorite quality is, and I come back to this one quite a bit. I think that it's a forgotten art, just like being welcoming to people has become a bit of a forgotten art, and there is greatness and strength in knowing when someone is in need of something and stopping your own life, stopping your own thoughts and pausing to say, oh, hey, what can I give you here? What can I do for you here? And saying it to yourself. I think that the other piece that makes this quality really my favorite is the letter that Marianne wrote to Nurturing, which starts, Dear Generous Heart.
And the woman that I had in mind when I was writing this is Glynis Redmond, who is a performance poet. She lives in North Carolina, but Glynis is on the road traveling more days in a year than she gets to be home. She is in nurturing service to the poetry of life, and she nurtures and draws out and inspires young people and adults. She was at the White House last week with a group of champion poets, all under the age of 16, and Glynis just glowed to be in the White House with the First Lady and these young poets, knowing that her work, her nurturing work of their young souls, brought them to this place of honor and recognition. And she didn't post a bunch of pictures of herself with Mrs. Obama or in one of the special rooms of the White House. What she shared were the pictures of the young people, because that's what nurturing does. Nurturing holds up others. And it is a great, strong, profoundly confident quality.
And you also said about it, about being like seeds. You talk about sowing seeds and stuff in that story. And I think we always, in old literature, we would always say the woman, she's like a flower, you know. And we would always think of that as seeds and blooming and blossoming, you know. And you think of it fall time, you think, you know, we're sowing seeds for next year, we're sowing seeds, you know, whatever. But a lot of people right now are sowing seeds in how to have a better life. Well, your book has a lot of topics in here that are sowing seeds to our listeners. We're saying that she is nurturing, and please read it. It's a great story because it tells how you could feel or how you could celebrate that part of you that might be hiding. Or you could just magically just read it and say, maybe it's not me today. Maybe it was a long time ago. So maybe I need to bring that part of me out again. Or maybe I never had it before. Is that what it really looks like? So that's really vitally important to say, I never thought of it that way. Or maybe, you know, how many times do you hear people say, it's not my job, let somebody else do it, I'm not going to do it. I don't know about you, but hey, four kids, I don't fix my bed, I don't clean the house. It's okay that I didn't stop and get what you needed on the way home. I was busy. We all know about that one. But certain people, like I would say to certain people, how can I help you? What can I do for you? Is there something that you need? And it's just common conversation in some people's mouths, but it's not in others. And that's what we're really looking to shed the light on, is saying, maybe start using some of these words. Maybe seeing how you can help others also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think taking the focus, I think that there's because we're human beings and we have egos and we have needs, I think that there often is a tendency to put our needs first and like, well, I need to take care of this and I need to take care of that.
Right.
But to, you know, to turn that around and have a moment where it's just like, oh, wow. Okay, so here's this person right in front of me who, you know, is part of my life, who I love, who is struggling with something, and I can stop and not have every moment in the day be about me. And there's something, the first couple of times you do it, that feels a little awkward. I look at Marianne as someone who is a role model for that kind of behavior. I think me a little less. But when I do it, there's definitely that feeling of like, there's almost a relief of not having all of my time and attention focused on me and what I need and what I need to make happen and how I want to be feeling. And I think, you know, the story that Marianne was just sharing about Glynis Redmond and the work that she's doing with the young poets. And I love that, Marianne, that, you know, she took just photos of the kids in the White House and made it about them. And, oh, my God, you know, how many people would never have even thought of that. It would have been just, here's me and the First Lady, and here's me. And to just, you know, turn that vision a little bit and kind of look behind, or, you know, turn your head and look a little bit different and realize to hold other people up is just as fulfilling to us as fulfilling our own needs, I think.
And a lot of people consider that behavior very soft behavior, very gentle behavior. And I want to shout, metaphorically, of course, Glynis Redmond is anything but soft. She's just become a grandmother, so she can be very soft and tender. But when Glynis walks into a room, poetry has arrived, and it is not quiet. She is an orchestra, and she carries all of the instruments with her, and she speaks the poetic truth in a rhythm and a cadence that engages your ear and your body and your thinking process, and she helps you grow, and you don't even notice it. That's nurturing, and it's anything but soft and gentle. So as we describe these qualities, Dr. Jeanette, there are lots of different ways to take in the quality and explore it and articulate it in a woman's life.
As we've said on this show many times, is that every woman is so individual that you couldn't find two alike. So I think everybody has such varying degrees, but the point, but also to be so cognizant of the words saying that you do. Everybody does have parts of this in them. I mean, even when you talk about things like she is magical or she is a leader, how many women would actually say that they're a leader? Well, goodness, if you know, if you're a leader, because you could be a leader if you're a stay-at-home mom, because you kept, you know, everything going in the house. The house didn't fall down and be in total disarray. You could be a leader because maybe that's at work, or you could be a leader just by showing or presenting yourself in a manner that you would hope that your children would follow. That's being a leader also. So there's so many different ways you could say that.
And the first example that you offered, Dr. Jeanette, is you could be a leader by being a stay-at-home mom. I want to underscore, Liz and I had this conversation so many different times, that when we talk about the greatness of women, we're not thinking about women in traditional power jobs. We talked about the mother at home, the woman caring for a home, being one of the most difficult and amazingly demanding leadership roles that a woman has in our country. When I was a much younger woman, I saw my friend had two adopted children and she was exhausted. And I gave she and her husband a weekend away, Friday afternoon to Sunday evening. Piece of cake! When they came home Sunday night, I wept. I was so relieved to have them home. And they brought me gifts, and I said, I'm going to... thank you, and I'm going to open those at home because I'm getting out of here. And it gave me a lifetime of depth of appreciation for a woman's job who is a mother, which is by definition a full-time job in and of itself. And then we bless that woman with another full-time job. At an office or an establishment outside the home, it's jaw dropping. And you raised four children, yes?
Yes, and don't worry, I've had many women who would call me up and saying, "I'm sending my daughter over to babysit because she thinks she wants to have a baby." They would spend 6 hours at my house, and they'd change their mind totally. I went through babysitters. That's all they ever gave me was 6 hours. That was it. Oh, well. Buzz them right through. But, you know, let's talk about the topic, too. She says she is welcoming. You know, I absolutely love that page because you have the peace lily on that page. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, women, we always say, the common conversation will say, go talk to your mother. I know she'll listen. Or, you know, friends will go talk to other friends' mothers. You never hear them say they're going to talk to their father about anything. Or you say, I'm going to go sit by grandmother's house. Or, you know, different things like that. And it's generally always of the female intuition that they're trying to feel that it is a little bit more open and a little bit more welcoming to be able to have those conversations and be able to touch you more, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I think that the quality of being welcoming is mm-hmm. It always feels to me like it's a very female trait. But I, you know, not to leave all the guys out there, I do know quite a few guys who are very adept at same. I think that as women, I'll speak for myself, but I think I am speaking for other people, other women as well. I think as women, we tend to gravitate towards other women when looking for where we meet each other. There's a commonality of experience. There's a commonality of existence. There's a commonality of just being in a woman's body that I think is so much different than being in a men's body and man's body. And I don't know for sure. I just know that I've asked some serious questions of men, like, well, what is it like to feel, what is it like to be in there in your very different body than mine? And I think that we so we meet each other on that plane, and it strips away the need for a lot of explaining ourselves. You know, we can cut through a lot of that already and get down to who we are as very individual people. I think that the quality of welcoming that that you brought up, which I love this quality too. Yeah, I love all of them. But this is another one that, as in to use Marianne's word, that people assume as a soft quality. Like, why? What's so great about welcoming other people? And I think we've lost touch with that. You know, welcoming the new person into a group, welcoming a person to your dinner table who perhaps doesn't know the other guests at dinner, welcoming the new person that works in your office or your, you know, place of business, and meeting them where they are, where you are, it's a precious commodity that we have lost touch with, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about nurturing, and we also talk about being cared for and caring in the female people. You know, the big swell was nurses, because nurses could care for people, meet them at their heart, meet them in their soul, you know, being able to sit next to them and really listen to them. And then it's interesting that, you know, you look at the doctors, and the doctors are the ones that had the brains. So you had a heart and a soul and a brain. Hey, you know, female and male, then they wonder why healthcare is such a mess, because they still think it's a separate being, you know. Why can't they both do the same things? I don't get it, you know. So.
Right.
But we always talk about all the qualities. I mean, women can have all of those, and men can too. It's just a matter of awakening that quality and being able to nurture it, and to be able to have it, have no boundaries, have no labels, and be able to come forth. So many times I talk with clients and I say, there's no labels here. It just is what it is, and we're just here. You know, they will say, oh, but, you know, what is your degree, or what is this? Or you would go to meet a client and they will say, well, I'm this, this, and this. And I'll say, okay, fine, what's your first name? And I only address by the first name, because labels really don't matter. It's really about the person, what's inside them. And I think your book really brings that out, you know, so people can recognize that in themselves and say, you know what, I'm not doing such a bad job. So many people, I think, right now are having a stuckness, or they, we would call it an overwhelming I won't call it depression, I will call it sadness, or they're having shift changes in their heart, and they're just not quite settled in yet. We've spoken about that on the show before, and we're saying they just don't feel like, they feel like they're a square peg in the round hole, or whatever that thing is, and they just don't feel like they've really settled in yet to be able to put roots down. And I think really to read this book, you can take all these qualities and say, you know what, it's okay, because this is where I am. This is who I am. You know, it'll give you another insight into looking at yourself instead of all those other things out there, job, house, car, blah, 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 which makes absolutely no difference in the long run.
No, and sometimes it's all of those secondary, the surface things that we put so much more importance on, you know, like so-and-so is driving a brand new car, and so-and-so has just bought a five-bedroom house, and oh, isn't that wonderful? And like you just said, it's those things at the end of any life, or at the end of any, you know, moment in time, are of no meaning whatsoever. It's I think that we are often so uncomfortable with how much we don't know about ourselves and the universe and what's going to happen, that we glom on to the car and the cool boots and, oh, I want this. And they're all things, because they're quick remedies to feeling insecure.
But it's also looking for justification to who you are from outside yourself. Mm-hmm. When you read the book, I think that gives you justification for who you are inside yourself.
Inside,
what is more important, out or in? You know, outside stuff can be gone away. I mean, we've talked before here on the show. I mean, we had Hurricane Katrina. When you have everything and you only have what's on your back, your clothes and your pants and your shoes, and you're walking out the door and you're saying, this is it, well, just how important is that knick-knack stuff that you think you're going to be carrying around with you. You just don't have that stuff anymore, you know, and you just don't, it's just of total utter unimportance, you know. But there's many people who, after that, all those things washed away, they felt very lost. They couldn't find that inner sense of themselves, and they went back to collecting material things. So it's really about being able to sit down and say, I think I'm, you know, do you want to get that answer from outside yourself or not? So am I nurturing? You would ask yourself. And you would say, well, you look in the book and you say, what is nurturing? What does it sound like? Does this maybe sound like me? Does this resonate with how I live my life? And then you could say, okay, I'm okay with that. And then you could turn the other page and says, you're magical. And you're saying, no way, I'm pretty much stuck in a rut. But then you read the magical part and you say, you know, that sounds kind of interesting. Put it in your brain, you know, that where you just like recognize it one time and it may come up another time. You go to the next page and you might say, she is compassionate. And I think that this decade is really all about compassion. People have lost it. And it's really important to be able to say, I'm going to sit, let's say you sit down at some kind of event or a seminar or something. I live in the Deep South. This is normal to us. It is not normal to the rest of the world. We sit down at a table next to somebody. We have no clue who they are, and we turn next to them and say, oh, gosh, that looks really cool. I really like your dress. Where did you get it? Oh, are you going to eat that? Oh, man, I don't like that. Does that taste good? And we have these conversations with everybody and everyone because it's just the way we are, which is very open. But then you travel to different areas of the country and you say, well, they're not really like that. Well, they're really not. So, you know, we know that everybody's different. We know that everybody has different characteristics. It's just about awakening them. I think if you sit next to somebody that's really staunch and doesn't want to talk to you, hey, you don't want to talk to me, get up and move. You know, there's always an empty seat there. Somebody else will come sit down. You know, so it's really important to think about, too, and not be stuck in saying, oh, my gosh, they didn't like me. I didn't turn out good. I didn't talk right. Just like you say in the book about she has a voice. Oh, I didn't say that right. They might not like me. I'm not going to talk the rest of the night. We all know somebody that does that, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So let's talk about something else. Liz, can you tell us a little bit about She's in Service and She is Magical? I think those are the two of the great ones, too.
Oh, they are, aren't they? The Magical... going to the page right now.
It had a great picture with it. You know, I have to say this right up front. Thank you so much that these aren't Twiggies. You know, and well, I mean, really, because it looks like a regular woman. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody that's, you know, short skirts and bikinis on. You know, it's.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful picture of a woman. It's what I think and. When you look at the pages, it's like they're just fabulous photos, and you can connect with that.
Yeah, one of the things that we very carefully chose to do with the illustration is that all of these women are old vintage illustrations from the 1900s and even before into the 1800s, and which, so I took, they're all engravings, and then I took them into Photoshop and hand-colored each one of them because for just the reason that you just said, it was a choice that we made to honor women rather than creating illustrations that were of this time where,
right.
As we all know, you know, we compare ourselves and am I good enough and do I do I look okay? And so to turn to She is Magical, if there, to use your description, if there had been a woman with a bikini and something else, there are a lot of women that would have just rolled right past that.
Right.
And I think too that because the illustrations are vintage, they're not of our time, we can relate or not relate to all of them in the same way, in that we don't dress this way anymore. And So there's a timelessness to them that just makes them female, just makes them women. And I think this one in particular, with the woman playing, holding the violin, she's actually got the bow down by her side. So I always imagine that she just finished playing and she's thinking about the piece that she was working on. But there's a clarity and a beauty to her that you can see in her eyes and her stance. And I love that she's holding the violin and that this is the one that we decided was going to be the magical woman. I think one of the other pieces that I love is on that second spread for each of the qualities, there is a contributor that we asked someone to contribute to each quality. And so in that little box that's on the third page, that was a contribution from somebody. And I want Marianne to speak to this because Kathleen Everett, who is the woman who contributed here, is her friend. And it's a beautiful piece that she wrote for this.
Dr. Jeanette, can I read what Kathleen wrote?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kathleen is a contra dancer, and she has a way of dressing that is comfortable and engaging to her, and it's layered and colorful and manages to be sophisticated as well. And I recall the story when Kathleen moved into a brand new house with her children. The yard was daunting to her because she was a full-time nurse and she didn't imagine that she would have time to tend such a pristine yard. So she planted flowers overall. Instead of lawn, she had flowers and flowering bushes. And one day she came out of her house with an armful of flowers that she was taking to work, and a little girl in the neighborhood, she heard her tug on her mother's clothing, and the little girl said to her mother, "See, Mama, I told you a fairy lived there."
Oh, goodness.
And
isn't that wonderful?
She is like that, and she is a contra dancer, and so she wrote, "I dance because I can. You can, too. Hear the music. It's underfoot and overhead and inside you. Listen carefully. It's always there. You've got all the moves. Step aside. Turn. Lean in. Yield. Circle back. Spin around. Bend over backwards. Lean forward. Rest assured. Scoot over. Cozy up. Move closer. Dance your work. Dance your play. Dance your heartbreak. Dance your joy."
And that's wonderful sayings that you have all throughout this book. And, I mean, for Kathleen to say this on this page, it's just a great tribute to the whole book, because this, everything you can see in here is just, you just listen to it, you just read it, and you just sit, and you just think on that. And it just settles in your heart. I mean, it's not something that you're like looking for the next dance or the next word to say or whatever it is. You know, oh, I can't wait to get through this book. No, you just read it and you just sit with it. And I think that's the best thing about the book.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I think I was just going to say one of the things that Marianne and I very actively talked about as we were putting the book together was that was the feeling of, you know, that you could open it to anywhere and start.
Right.
And that the second piece was that you could stay in one of the qualities or one of the chapters for as long as you wanted to. And flip back and forth. And, you know, we have a lot of people that have been in touch with us since the book came out in December last year and have said, you know, they keep it by their bedside or on a table by their favorite chair. And they just pick it up and let it fall open. And I have one friend in particular said, this is maybe 6 or 7 months ago, it keeps falling open to "She is a Leader." It keeps falling open to there. And I was like, okay. And, well, I'm feeling really annoyed.
Yeah.
Okay. But keep opening it. And she's like, I keep opening it. I think that there's a beautiful way that words and images can speak to us that way, and to have a book that was very consciously, very purposefully created to do that. I was so totally jazzed that you know, it was going to come together that way, and that Marianne had the same kind of feeling of excitement as I did about how it really could work that way, and that it didn't necessarily, you can read it from the beginning, but you don't have to, and there's such kind of a freedom in that books are usually more a story that you start at the beginning, and if you start in the middle, then you're going to be confused.
Right. Well, you know, I think the most important thing as we're coming to the end of the show is one that says, she is contentment. The picture is so vitally important here. So, Liz, you could talk a little bit about the picture. But what I'm thinking about when she is contentment, I mean, how many times are you non-content with yourself? I mean, come on, we could sit down and say, am I ever? What does that mean? You know? And some people will say, content? What does that mean? You know, they don't know what the definition of the word is, and that's so vitally important. But also, you know, with the picture that you have here, that really speaks to, are you content with who you are physically and how you present yourself, but also contentment where you are in your life or where you're going or what you're doing. And it's really coming at the end of the book is a great thing, because as you go through here, granted all of the letters, they always are ended with she. They say she is determined on all the pages, or leader, or she is this or that. And I think I would encourage the listeners to take out a sheet of paper and say, I am, and write a letter to yourself and hook it on that page. I am compassionate. How am I compassionate? This is how I am compassionate. Or how am I magical? Oh, that's something I have to work on. So write a little paper there. Dear me, you know, and then sign your name on the bottom for yourself and say, you know,
absolutely,
I'd like to be more magical. How could I do this, you know? Or, you know, being determined or imaginative. My kids, I couldn't stand amusement parks and stuff like that. But if you wanted to sit down and we were going to do arts and crafts and make wreaths and all this other stuff, hey, I was good for that, you know? So my kids would say, ah, oh, we're doing arts and crafts again. But, you know, now that they're older, that's what they do. It's so funny. So you have to think, you know, what are you, you know, write a letter to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
On that page, you know, take it and read the whole thing. And when you get really good at a certain section, say, I'm going to write the letter to myself. Instead of dear one, I'm going to say, it's me. I'm here. I'm present. I'm magical. I'm compassionate. And I love myself, or I'm content. And when you get to the end of the book, you'll say, you know what? I am a valuable person, and this is where I am. So this is a really timely book right now, because a lot of people are not in that place.
We're excited that our book can be part of a person's discovery of their own power, their own strength, and their own capacity to set their personal agenda and live according to what is purposeful and meaningful to them. I love your idea of making this book just simply a set of prompts for love letters that an individual would write to themselves. It's a great idea.
So many people, you know, when you come to the end of life, they're saying, oh, well, I just want to look at old pictures. Or, here's the best one. When somebody is sick and they'll say, oh, well, I'm going to go get mom her lunch. I know what she really likes. And they go and bring it back, and the mother might be sick or something, and she'll say, oh, thank you so much for bringing it. Can you just set it to the side? I'll get to it later. I'm not hungry now. Not really true. It's never been her favorite. You just didn't know her. You know, you don't know what she's likes now, or you never really paid attention. It might have been your favorite and not your mother's. So really, by writing these letters to yourself, you know, you can leave a legacy, you know, of who you are, or what was important to you in your life. So many people are missing out on that. Facebook is not who you are in life. Social media is not who you are in life. You know, it is just not, you know, or all these big fancy pictures you put up. It's not. You know, it's about how many times am I going to clean the bathroom because all four kids are throwing up, you know? Or, hey, I had all four with chicken pox. One week, one next week, one the next week, and one the next week. So, hey, that's something, you know, to say, great, you know, I did it. You know, it was a great thing. I was compassionate. I was nurturing. I took my time out. I did what I felt was best, you know? And your kids will remember those things. They're not going to remember the other stuff, like how much money you paid for a prom dress. Well, take that back. Mine does remember how much I paid for a prom dress.
I disagree, too. I know a couple of girls that will remember the rest of their lives.
I'm telling you, prom dresses, they used to be hundreds of dollars. They're over $1,000 now, and it's ridiculous. But it's crazy. But don't you think that, I mean, really, this book is like, just like, as I've said, it's like a template. It's really something that you can open yourself up to and put your legacy in it. It could be like your diary book. Just stick some things in there. Hey, that's a good idea. What y'all going to make a next book? You need to make a workbook to go with this. Oh, goodness. Well, you know, guys, we really buzzed through the hour. Thank you so much for being with us. Would you like to share your websites, what you're doing now, any events coming up, other books you have, and your links? That would be great.
You can find me at lizcalickdesigns.com, and I'm on all the usual social media places with my artwork. I'm working these days on a right now I'm working on the second issue of a magazine that a colleague and I published. The first one in June, and the second one's coming out in November. That's called Mabel, Making a Living, Creating a Life. That's kind of geared to potentially some of your listeners, women who are trying to carve out a living that fulfills them and earns some money, and not forgetting about the life that comes with that too. And so, you know, trying our best to create whatever balance we can between life and work. And working on some painting projects, and I don't know what Marianne and my next project will be.
My current work is available at appliedinsight.net, and I am also, you can attach whatever server you'd like to the end of my name, and you'll find me somewhere around there. And I'm going to be finishing a book called Love Letters from God in the next couple of weeks, and that'll be published late next spring.
Fabulous. So I guess we'll have you both on at different times to speak about your other projects. You're always welcome.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's been a pleasure being in conversation with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us. As the listeners have known, is that after January 1st, we will be transitioning the show from alternative health and wellness to an over 50 women celebrating themselves. And so, but this will definitely fit into that paradigm, so perhaps maybe you'll be able to come back then.
Would love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So to the listeners, if you'd like more information about Marianne and Liz, please do check out their links. They are on the bottom of today's show page. And if you'd like to find out more information about their book is called She, A Celebration of Greatness in Every Woman. It's a really great book. And definitely, if you're feeling really stuck and you're really just not, need a little bit of help, you know, you need somebody to light your candle or maybe to hold the candle while you walk on that path. We know it's really difficult these days. Life is really changing. Please do check out my website. It's mypersonaladvocate and then the number 2.com. I do offer services there where we do come out and we just, you know, talk over the phone. Hey, do you need a compassionate call? Love to do compassionate calls. Calling you up saying, how are you doing and how are things going? We're here for you, so please do reach out. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher for Sedona Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining this evening, and have a great day.